What's going on, listeners? Welcome back to Matt Goes to the Movies, and we are here to continue talking about the John Wick series with John Wick Chapter 2, which is another first for Rob as he on this journey in November into December. And Rob, we both were highly praised the first movie. And I feel like the second movie gives you a lot of the same, but also increases the stakes. So I'm going to be really interested to see what your thoughts are on chapter two of John Wick, as this is the first time that you've seen this one as well. So welcome back.
Yeah, thank you. Again, thank you for choosing these, because I watched the first one and I said to you, why did I wait so long to watch this? I finished the second one probably about 15 minutes before we went on air tonight. And again, I'm thinking to myself throughout the entire movie, what kind of idiot am I that I waited this long to watch this movie? Like, I'm a complete moron. People should not listen to anything I have to say about movies, because I waited this long to watch a movie that was this good. Like, what kind of moron am I that I didn't see this yet?
Well, you know, certainly, I mean, if anybody has listened to these episodes and has heard anything about you, I can understand it. You got little ones that don't always, lend you time and their activities to watch something like this. And this is not certainly a movie that you're going to watch in front of your kids. Certainly not at that age yet. So I could certainly see how this would have been like, yeah, I just don't really have time to watch this one. But I'm excited. You've got a lot of returning cast. You've got certainly new faces and some people that I was pleasantly surprised with in this movie, especially based on sometimes what you normally get. And, you know, the first thing that I'm going to talk about here is, were you surprised by any of the actors? Because the one that I was most surprised by was Common. I was really impressed with him in this movie, actually.
Yeah, and without pulling up his IMDb in front of me, I know I've seen him in other things and find him to be a very credible actor. I think there's not a huge list of musicians and actors that can flow seamlessly in between both. You know, I think maybe Will Smith and LL Cool J kind of stand out. Mark Wahlberg, I think, although he's not really been a musician in quite some time. Oddly enough, Keanu Reeves is in a band called Dogstar that nobody cares about. So I guess, you know, there's that too. It's hard to do. And I've enjoyed him in everything that I've seen him in. There's a couple times later in the movie, they probably should have gone to his stunt double. But then there's other times where the action he does pull off is well done. So it's kind of a little bit of a mixed bag there. But no, I definitely enjoyed him.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk some more about some of the other people. But, you know, basically this movie it's a direct continuation of the first one, where I really love this opening, and it just, again, the way that they build John, how, you know, not only there's a lot of show of respect, but there's also still that fear. And that's one of the things that I like that continues over into this movie, is just this myth and this legend of John Wick is everywhere. He certainly has to travel international in this movie, but you can see like the respect that people in this, you know, brotherhood, fraternity, the secret society have for this character. And I thought it was just another like well done job, like creating this bigger myth about him.
Yeah. It's almost, you know, it's kind of like the assassin version of the Beatles. Like he's, you know, he's revered as this God figure, but you like when he shows up, body bags are going to start having to get pulled out and used. Like you have to buy the body bags in like the industrial role when this guy shows up, because just getting them one at a time is not going to, you kind of got to go to like BJ's or Sam's Club and get them in bulk, because otherwise you're going to run into some problems. I love that this the actions of the previous film really set in motion what we see here. We just talked about this a little bit ago, but there's so many parallels between this series and the Jason Bourne series that we just covered recently. I love that there's a natural continuation. I love that the events of this aren't necessarily tied into some kind of new MacGuffin that they just came up for the purpose of, hey, people seem to like that first one. Keanu wants to come back. You guys want to just make a sequel and cash a check? It feels natural. It doesn't feel forced. It doesn't feel like there's new elements that are being introduced just for the sake of a sequel. It's a natural continuation of the world, and I love it. And we get more world building, you know, the impossible task that was referenced in the first one. There's so many things about that that are still very mysterious that we still don't even fully get an explanation of in this film. It does such a great job of, again, setting the motion this as a natural progression of where we leave off in the first. I just love the mystery and the deeper lore being built around it. It's not a cheap cash in. It's a true sequel that builds on the first. And I mean, we talked about this. I don't know how many other times. How many other sequels can you think of that are better than the first or not a noticeable drop off in quality? There's not many.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no. And I think maybe the only thing that is a drop off in this movie for me, and I'm going to get this out of the way because it's one of the only things that I really take issue with, is there are certain scenes where the general public seems way too nonchalant with what's going on around them. It happens in the subway. Like, I know when the subway car stops, like, the people get out. That's a fight later that, you know, John has. But even when they're walking through and like they're fighting, you know, in the subway before getting on the train, when they're shooting at each other from like across like the mall or whatever building they're in, because they really don't know. There just seems to be like a lot of casual people like, oh, I wonder what that was. Or, oh, hey, there's two guys fighting. And not just like two guys fighting, like two guys with knives going after each other. And that's like my only real complaint about this movie, that I had kind of forgotten about that. Yeah, like it just seems way too casual at certain points.
100%. There's way too many when he's taking off and they're all coming after him. There's way too many bodies and way too many public places and way too much violence going on. Like, I know it's New York and people are like, must be Tuesday, you know, guys on the subway are stabbing each other. You guys want to get some Starbucks when we get off here? Yeah, let's go ahead. You know, like,
you're not make me late.
Yeah. I mean, it's, I get that, but it still seems odd that, it doesn't trigger anything else to happen. Like, you don't get cops showing up throughout this whole melee, which honestly is better for storytelling purposes. Cause you like that introduces a whole other element. Like there's no police really. I mean, there's the one guy that's his friend that,
right,
you know, probably on the take or whatever to kind of cover up for him. But outside of that, like all of this exists in its own like sense of law and order. They have their own rules. They have their own people that enforce the rules, you know, it just when you add like actual real cops or FBI, I think that would complicate the story in a way that doesn't work. But you're right, there's just way too casual. And I guess I'm just gonna go ahead and get it out there, one of my biggest complaints about this movie, and I don't have many, but there is an over reliance on silencers in this movie that don't actually work in reality the way that we're shown in movies, and that always bothers me. A silencer on a gun, it's really more accurate to call it a suppressor than a silencer, because in movies, when you've got, and this it's same way in video games too, when you put the silencer on the gun, it takes something that normally shoots, you know, makes a noise at around like 160 to 130 decibels, which is by the way, 130 decibels is the threshold of pain. You know, most guns, when they go off, they're in that range. It's well over the threshold of pain. And it really drops it to like 120 decibels is really what they do. So it's below the threshold of pain, but it's still about the sound, like the level of a jackhammer. Okay. Or louder than a chainsaw, but more like a jackhammer.
Yet they sound pew, 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 pew.
Yeah. It makes it sound like you dropped a rubber eraser on the floor is how they do it in video games and movies. And that's not really how it works. And part of my problem with it is not only is that not how it works, but there are so many people that guns are not their thing, and that's fine. Guns don't have to be your, if you're not into it, you don't have to shoot one. You don't have to own one. You don't have to interact with one if you don't want to. But there are a lot of people, because they don't have any real life experience with firearms, that they get a lot of their information about how they think firearms do and don't work from movies, from TV, from other media, like games and comics and things like that. And there's a lot of people based on movies that think that silencers are this big evil thing that we need to, and a silencer, just, it's not even an accurate name for it. So that does bother me, and I'm going to get off my soapbox now.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's because, again, like, they're shooting right next to people in one scene, and like nobody can like supposedly hear these guns going off. But again, there's some small minor things. But you know, the story of this movie, this continuation is, I mean, first and foremost, you get the chase scene where he goes to get back his car. I really like that scene. I also love too, cause I was thinking it, while it was happening, but he literally gets this car back, and it's more of like principle to get it. Because he destroys the crap out of this thing, getting out of this, this predicament that he's in. But Aurelio, John Leguizamo's character, is back briefly in this movie. He doesn't have a lot, you know, he doesn't have a lot to do, but he says, like, what I was thinking. He's like, Jesus, John, I thought you loved this car. And he's like, well, like, you can fix it because it's just beat to hell.
And they never talk price, right? That's right. I love that. It's just call me when it's done. He doesn't even say what's the estimate.
Yeah. And, you know, we get into the story of the a crime boss who is part of this world, Santino D'Antonio, who helped John. And we still don't know exactly how he helped him in this task that allowed him to leave this life. But one of like their unbreakable bonds is, what's it called? Why am I thinking of the name? The medallion.
And yeah, it's like the blood oath.
The marker, and it's a blood oath. So like John owes this guy. He's come to collect, and John tells him, no. Like, I actually thought that was like really good. You know, you find out this guy's an asshole, but I actually really like that scene where he's like, I don't want to do this. And John's like, then don't ask me. I really did like that because I feel like this movie actually does it more so than the first one. Even it does a really good job of bringing tension into the mix. And there's like a natural progression of buildup where I was like, you know, I like when I first saw it, now granted most of it, I know what's happening, but it's like, man, like what's going on? Did you sense that since you've watched this for the first time? Like, I just felt like it ramped up as the movie went on of, okay, what is going to happen? Where is this going? I thought they did a really good job with that.
Absolutely. And the thing that I really keyed in on, and this is maybe one of my favorite things about this series in general so far, has been it takes normal Hollywood conventions and tropes for the most part and dumps them on their head. There's a lot of ways that Hollywood could cookie cutter write that scene that you're describing, and it's not done that way at all. At least I don't believe so. I really enjoyed where he was like, please don't ask this. Like, I like, just don't, like, really do yourself a favor and don't. And it made me more curious. What is this? What's going on here? You know, it draws you deeper and deeper into this world, into who these characters are, and just the economy of how their world works. You know, these gold coins, and then they have these other markers and things like that. You want to know more. And what's amazing is they only, like, you only see it actually in action. this movie never, this series never really stops to explain itself. It lets the audience kind of figure it out and fill in the blanks on their own. And I love that.
Yeah, no, I think that's such a perfect way to describe it. And, you know, John, after getting his house blown up, eventually, you know, he goes to the Continental to talk to Winston and says, look, it's, you know, it's one of two rules. You don't kill on Continental grounds, and you have to honor the marker. Otherwise, it's a death sentence. So John agrees. He meets with Santino, San Antonio, and, you know, agrees to kill his sister because he wants his spot at the head table. Well, he wants her spot at the high table. And I just, again, it's so simple, but I love that to get guns, they present it like it's a goddamn wine tasting.
Oh, it's so fun.
He's like, I'd like a tasting, something bold. What about for the end of the night? Like that whole scene, like I'm just, and again, like this is a fictional universe where the, I mean, we'll talk about it. The body count is high as hell in this movie. But it's just so fun. Like I'm sitting here watching this, just like, having fun with the fact that, like, yeah, he's going to use this to kill a lot of people. Like,
yeah. And it's so casual the way they're conducting business, just the same way you and I would go in and buy a Slurpee.
Right. Yeah. Right. Exactly. What do you want? Cherry or raspberry?
Yeah. And it's, I actually think the gearing up montage, we've seen the, in other action movies, there's always a gearing up montage, right? But the way they do it here, where he's getting fitted at the tailor and he's getting the, mm-hmm. you know, the bulletproof linings put in and stuff like that. It's there's such a charm about this series and the rules and the way that this world conducts itself that I am absolutely enthralled by.
And, you know, we don't have a lot to go off of, but again, I just feel like part of it for me is the way that like, everybody talks to John. Part of that charm is in that for me. Like, it's just weird because we don't see them really talking to any other, like, we don't see the tailor talking to any of these other hitmen or anything, but there's just something about it where I feel like they almost talk to John in a different manner. And like, I'm just making that up completely in my head, but that's the way I choose to see it. That's part of the charm for me is the way that they interact with John.
Yeah. And again, thinking back to some of the things that we praise about the first movie, they treat this crazy world, this crazy job that these hitmen have as just any other 9-to-5, like whatever, like for those of you listening right now, whatever your job is, they don't treat this any different than you treat your job. Like the whole exchange with Common, you know, when he first meets him is just great. Like it's, they're having the conversation, you working again? And it's like asking him, did you file your TPS reports? Like yeah. It's in the same tone. It's, yeah, and it's great.
Even Winston has a line when he's first talking to John. He's like, without it, we're no better than the animals. And it's like, yeah, like this is just everyday normal life to them. It's very believievable. And it
like,
just,
I honestly believe that he's got a 401k.
Right.
Somebody's yeah. giving him a 401k out of this.
Yeah. And, you know, as in that conversation that you said, with Common and John, his Common's character's name is Cassian in this. I even, again, in the scope of this world, before that happens, you know, John carries out his mission, to kill Gianna. And I really like that scene as well. I mm-hmm. thought there's a weird respect there. Like she doesn't try to fight it. She takes her own life, which is, you know, I mean, it's tasteful actually, kind of like.
That could have been a lot weirder. You're right.
Yeah, it could have. And that's, it feels weird saying that. but, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, but, I mean, she only slits her wrists and sits in a hot bath naked. I mean, what's weird about that?
It's like, it could have been a lot more gratuitous. Like it's
right. And it wouldn't have added anything if they had.
Right. It's not like you actually see anything when she's naked. Like, you see her back. Like, it's almost shot tasteful in a weird way. And, like, even the weird, like, respect of John, like, holding her hand for a second.
Yeah.
There's just something really weird and, like, I don't want to say calming, but if you've watched the movie, you probably feel the same way.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like he wants to be there in the first place, but he has to be.
Yeah.
And he is sharing a moment of intimacy with another human being as that person passes on to the next world.
Yeah. And
like, he understands the gravity of that.
Right. And even too, like, when he talks to Common, you know, he knows what this is. Well, I should say Cassian, but he knows what this is going to lead to. And the realization too of Cassian, like, you know, he says, "Hey John, you working again?" Yes. But that, you can see it, that realization that, like, oh my God, like, he's here for, he calls her my ward, someone that I was close to. You get the impression that he really, really cared for her. But again, I like that because they just kind of leave it open-ended. They don't, like, it's not like, oh, they were a couple, they were a thing. But in this world, it's just like, whether it's a deep respect for her or whatever the case may be, like, you can tell that Cassian, like, really cared about that person and is devastated that she's gone. But I like that they don't make it anything else. Like, you can draw your own conclusions. And you could be right, you could be wrong, but it doesn't matter. What matters is they do a very good job presenting that this meant something to him.
Absolutely. And what I think really makes that sell even more is, I don't know necessarily that I believe they were an item or romantically together or he had romantic feelings for. Yeah. I don't know that I necessarily believe that or not. I mean, maybe they did, maybe they didn't. I don't know. But what's interesting is, you know, for Cassian, as far as he's concerned, like, he's out of a job.
Right.
You know, like, he's not going to still be collecting that paycheck. And yet something about her was important enough to him that he's going to continue to go after John, even after he's off the hook now for that role, which was really interesting. There's something else there. And I would love to see that. I kind of thought, again, thinking about how this movie doesn't follow the normal tropes in most cases of things we see in Hollywood, when you think about how he gets in, it's not like a boss battle per se to get to her and then there's the big standoff.
No,
like,
that was,
it's
cool.
It's the antithesis of a boss battle. She kills herself, you know.
Right.
And like, and it's quiet and it's a talking scene. The real battle is on his way out. It's his extrication that's the battle, that's the great action scene. It's not the way in. And I love that about this movie.
And Jesus, is it a battle?
No.
You thought the first movie had a body count. I mean, you better have two seatbelts on for this one, because he, my God. That escape scene is just, I love too how he's so precise, like, again, like, in the context of the movie, we're just gonna, this is what I'm saying, I'm not gonna repeat that, but he shoots the guy twice, like, with everybody, and it's, there's always the headshot, like, he rolls through, shoots him in the stomach, gets him once in the chest, and then, well, I'm just going to make sure you can't come after me still. Boom. And I love the different ways, like, each person, if you really watch that scene, like, each person is killed in a different way. Like, one person shot in the knee to bring them down. Then they're shot in the head. Another person is, like, shot twice in the ribs, and then they're shot in the head. Like, there's so many different moves. And again, there's a couple of scenes with Common where it was like, all right, the action, like, some of it was really slow. Maybe you could chalk that up to, like, both of those guys are exhausted by the time they get to each other, especially in John's case. But some of the punches felt very sluggish. But man, that gun shootout scene, going through the catacombs, going through the crowd, it never overstays its welcome. And each time he gets through somebody, it just feels fresh.
You know, this series really shines in the close quarters combat every time. It is very believable that our protagonist is truly a one-man army that can survive wave after wave of enemies. I mean, Wick is on horde mode throughout this, and he still gets out of it, and it's believable. They never rely on supernatural abilities. You know, they don't make our action hero have to do things that can't happen in the real world. It's grounded in the real world, in real world physics. There's not wire work that immediately reminds you you're watching a movie. You know, even going back to the beginning when he's getting his car back, you know, you talked about the creativity. Some of those silent takedowns, he switches between a garrote and then he makes the guard swallow and then spit out the cigarette later. Like, the creativity there in the choreography is incredible. There's a scene early in the movie where he opens the car door and it launches the biker over top.
Oh, God, that
was so good. And, you know, I just really want to touch one more time on that early scene before getting back to the tunnel. I really love the use of judo throughout this movie. I mean, it's really, really well done. However, in this first scene, it's one of those times where, like, the movie kind of forgets that guns exist. So clearly when we're in the scene where he's getting his car back, these are only the level one henchmen. You get the level two guys that have the knives. And then eventually, like, the level three guys have the guns, and maybe level four guys have, like, the flamethrowers or something like that. So these are only the level one guys, because none of them have guns, even though they're all scumbags in the underworld, like, that pull guns out of, like, every orifice you can imagine when they need it later on. Minor complaint, because I love the action scene, but this tunnel scene, wow. As weird as this is going to sound, and Matt, you kind of talked about it, like, we're going to stop apologizing for praising the violence and the blood. Right. But the fluidity, the creativity, and the choreography is truly a ballet of violence and is beautiful in its own unique way. And it really reminds me a lot, you know, just in terms of creativity and showing me things I've never seen before. You know, if you're an action junkie, if you're really into well done choreography and creative choreography, you know, you'll know who Yuen Wu-Ping is. Yuen Wu-Ping is a god in this space. And a lot of what I've seen in the first two John Wick movies, just it channels Yuen Wu-Ping in the best way possible. And for my money, one of the best action choreographers of all time. Did some work on The Matrix, of course. And this movie is violent, but it never overdoes the gore. Like, they don't have, you know, pieces of head and brain just laying all over the place. Like, that's not the kind of movie this is. We don't need that in this. Like, we can figure, like, they have the blood splatters and things like that. But I kind of appreciate that we don't have, like, you know, again, pieces of head and arms being detached and, you know, really seeing holes in people's bodies. You know, I think we're better off just having it be fluid and not really get that level of detail.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's the thing, is, like, there is a lot of violence, but it's not, you can see things, but it's not close-ups. Like, I mean, he shoots people in the head with a shotgun, but yet you don't see, like, chunks and splatter everywhere.
Right.
It's
'cause we don't need it.
No, you don't need it. It wouldn't have added anything, but I'm going to transition that into this movie. One thing as I was going through, I love the way this movie is shot. And I'm not just talking about the action. It's everything. Even the camera angle of him walking on the bridge, going to the Continental to talk to Winston for the first time after the house is blown up. The music score. I think the music score in this movie is amazing. It is, yes, for me, it's top notch. When he's walking, that music that's playing, I think is unbelievable. Like, I was so impressed with the framing, the cinematography. Like, you don't usually think that about action movies, but if you really stop and break this movie down, this is a fantastically shot movie.
I think from a technical standpoint, this movie is about as close to flawless as you can find from all of the behind the scenes stuff. I mean, it's incredibly well executed. Again, like you said, with action movies, we kind of focus on the action scenes, you know, is our hero believable? Do we like the story? You know, like, and then you kind of focus on some of those other things later. It's, you know, you mentioned the cinematography. Can you imagine what a nightmare it was to shoot that scene at the end with all the mirrors? I mean,
oh yeah,
that was, first of all, praising the movie's creativity. That was a cool scene to just come up with from a conceptual standpoint. I mean, it was, that's just a really cool idea. And then to try to have to go to your DP and be like, all right, well, you can't have anybody in the frame, so you figure it out. Good luck.
Seriously.
Try not to drink yourself to death in the process.
Yeah, that scene is really good. And because there's a character in that scene that I want to backtrack to, because I did not know her when I first saw this movie, and she's been in a lot more things. Certainly there was a very controversial story with this actress regarding Batwoman. But Ruby Rose in this movie, I loved her. She has not one piece of dialogue, because everything she does is sign language, but there was just something about that character that I absolutely loved. And when I first saw this movie, like, I had no clue who she was, and I was just like, man, she's really good, like, this is awesome. But yeah, I just, like, I love that. And even after, because, like, John gets betrayed when he's trying to go through the catacombs, he goes through a bunch of those men. He gets into that fight with Cassian, which I love. They bust through the window and they're like, gentlemen, no fighting on the continental grounds. And they're like, they just get up, they brush each other off, well, brush themselves off. And I love too, just the little, again, it's little tiny details where he's like, I think Cassian, he says to Cassian, Jin, right? That's what he says to Cassian. And then Cassian says to him, is it bourbon?
Yeah.
And it's just like, yes. And they just walk off to the bar and they have a drink. And even that conversation too, of like John telling him, like, I had a marker, this is what I did, I had no choice. And even Cassian's like, so you had no choice, but here's what it is. Like, even that scene, it's just so well done. And I'll make sure it's quick. It'll be a, like, consider it a professional courtesy. You know, he says, like, I'll try to do the same for you. And then, like, Ruby's character, Ares, is, like, sitting there. And she's just like, can I get you a drink? And then says, like, I'll be seeing you. And it's like, there's just, I don't understand. Like, I was thinking about this. I don't understand why these movies are so good. Because I really don't. Because you think about back in the 80s when these action movies were the thing, big muscle guys, action scenes, huge explosions, you know, that's what the action movies were. You look at action movies nowadays and how many of them are really, really successful, that are, like, you know what I mean, like, or really well filmed. You'd be like, yeah, you know, it was good, but there's not a lot to it. There's not a really interesting story. You're just interested because, all right, the action's good. That is not this movie. And I am just like, I'm amazed. And I'll just talk about the first two because I don't want to do spoilers, you know, for the third, obviously. I am just amazed that these two movies are as good as they are, because this is not your typical action movie.
Yeah. You're right. There's a lot here that, you know, feels like a truly complete film and not just a mindless action movie. You know, it's funny you mentioned the scene at the bar. There's a lot of ways that could have played out. And again, the stereotypical, a bot could have written this Hollywood movie, would have probably had a situation where they walk away from the bar, they shake hands, they reconcile their differences because Cassian realizes John had no choice. This was a marker of his that was called in, he had to comply with it. He understands the rules of the world they live in. And they would have agreed, like, I don't like it, but I understand. And then later on in the movie, Cassian shows up as a deus ex machina when John is, you know, in trouble and about right. to be taken out. And Cassian's the one that saves him. Like, you could have seen where that happened. And that's not what we got. And
because
that's what
we've
I
seen
love.
It happen.
I mean, literally, I've just described a scene from every action movie ever, almost. And we didn't get that. And that's what I love about this series.
Yeah, it's, you know, and then even again, the subtlety of, and I want, you know, you sit there and think like, okay, what has happened after this? But when they have their final fight and John gets the best of Cassian and he said, Rob, what does he say? He's like, the blade is in your,
is aorta.
And he's like, yeah. If you pull it out, you will bleed and die. Consider this a professional courtesy. And the crazy shit is, he's like, sits there and smiles. Like when John gets off the train, like Cassian's sitting there and smiling. And like, even that scene, I'm like, that's just really well done.
Yeah, there's, it makes you wonder, like, how long could he leave that in for before that would kill him anyways? Because I feel like that would kill him, like, almost instantly, if not instantly.
That's why I'm wondering if it's where it's like, so is he telling him that, like, if you take it out and try to pursue me, you're going to die. But if you sit here and get help, like, I'm letting you live. Like, I don't know how that works. Like, I don't know if he could actually survive that. But, like, in my head, I was like, did John spare his life? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's stupid. Cause maybe he would just die. Like he's going to die anyway. Like, I don't know what that to me, I don't know what that actually meant.
Yeah. Because if he was going to die anyways, that kind of goes back on him giving him a quick death, you know, like it seems like that wasn't, and it seemed like they were likely, I don't know if that would say they were friends in a previous, you know, work situation, but they were at least colleagues. They were at least right. friendly colleagues, I would think.
Well, you know? it feels like there's a respect level there. Like, and yeah. that's the thing. Like, there's certain, you know, even the manager, the Winston of the Continental in Rome, like the respect that's there for John. He's like, "Are you here for the Pope?" "No." "Okay. Well, here's a room." Like, even that. Like, I laughed at that. Like, "Are you here for the Pope?" He's like, "No." Like, but even that, like, so I feel like there was a level of respect between him and Cassian. Like, they respect, you know, the line of work that they're in. But yeah, I really like that scene. And then, you know, you get to the climax of the movie, which this is, I spoiled this talking about John Wick. But before you get to the climax of the movie, we get a Matrix reunion, which I loved, with Lawrence Fishburne and Keanu Reeves. What did you think of his character?
You know, there's, I liked that, John kind of threw a coin to the homeless guy and that was his way out. You know, there was, you know, that's kind of his, you know, just that world building again is so cool to me. And I kept waiting for something to feel Morpheus and Neo-esque in their back and forth. I kept waiting for something to feel that way. And it never did. It never did to me. And I like that about this because I didn't want it to feel like that scene or that relationship again, because I didn't want that to be this movie.
Yeah, that's, and I like that. It was nice to see them on screen together again, but again, I like that it felt fresh. That
it's a shame we couldn't have gotten it for Matrix 4.
Right, exactly.
It's a shame about a lot of things for Matrix 4.
It's a shame Matrix 4 exists. Yep. I feel. But yeah, no, I really like that. I like the fact that like there's the world inside the world, you know, with what he has going on. And then I just love, you know, there's another lengthy action scene that leads to that mirror scene. But I just, again, I love the phrase would be the brass balls on John, to he just shows up at this exhibit. Like, yeah. Like, so I love it.
I have to wonder, though. So we've praised the world. We've praised the uniqueness of it and the just kind of the lore that seems to be at play here. Does it bother you at all that, Santino put a contract out or called him to fulfill his oath? He fulfills his oath and he immediately puts a contract on him. And now he's going to succeed his sister, when there's plenty of people who knew that the only reason John killed his sister was because Santino called in the favor. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people who knew that, and we get to the end and it's a minor complaint, and I think it might be something that on a rewatch might bother me more. Okay. That everybody's just okay with the fact that he did that. Too many people would have known that. Like, if Cassian was really sore about Gianna's death, I feel like it would have made more sense. And I'm going to kind of maybe almost contradict something I said earlier. It almost would have made more sense for Cassian to want to take out Santino more than John. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. There's a little bit of wonkiness there with some of the story beats that I think I would have liked something to iron that out better for me.
No, I think that's a valid talking point. For me, I feel like there's kind of like a throwaway line, and I can't remember exactly what it was, because people did know about it. But again, like, in the rules of this world, he didn't actually break anything. So even though, like, he's the one who put out the hit and, like, Winston knows about it and other people know, he's technically not breaking any rules. So although they might not like it, they just have to go with it. Because even Winston says, like, you better fulfill the marker. And I even love, too, how Winston's like, you have no control over me. Like, I'm in charge here. Like, this is my spot. And even when he, like, even just the, I forgot what Santino says to him, but when he's like, and you, it's privileges. He just, like, looks back at him like, what? Like, I just kind of threatened you. And he's like, Winston's just so nonchalant about it. Like, that was really funny to me.
He doesn't even respond with the have the day you deserve kind of, like, backhanded, like,
yeah.
Like, you just know, like, really have a nice day.
Right. And I feel like, again, like, the reason why I'm kind of, like, okay with what you were talking about is because even Winston warns him, like, you knew what would come. Like, even Winston says, like, he's going to come for you and try to kill you. And if you're not on continental grounds, who cares? Like, I don't have to protect you. I don't have to revoke his membership. I don't have to do anything. Like, that's it. I think that is a very valid point and something that, you know, like you said, on a rewatch, you might be like, I'm not really sure. I just feel like within the rules of this universe, nobody's really broken anything. Just because you're a dick kind of doesn't matter. Like, because everybody seems to think this guy's a dick.
And I think, so it's partially that, but I think some of the bigger complaint there is that if he's getting this seat at this high table, but everybody knows that he's the one that ordered the hit on his sister, unless it's literally just like a monarchy where it just passes to the next of kin, regardless. Like, to me, I just go, why would they want to make deals with this guy? They obviously know they can't trust him. Like, I don't know. I would have liked something a little more fleshed out there, just to make me feel a little bit better that it kind of has some cohesion to it. Minor complaint, though.
I think that again, that is really that's really well said, actually. I agree with that. You get the mirror scene again. He takes out all those people. I did like the little subtle, you know, I did like the little be seeing you, John, after he kills Eris's character, or, you know, is in the process of killing her. But boy, I tell you,
I think that's actually a callback to the last movie. I think somebody else he took out said that same line to him.
Yes. I just, the tension buildup, and again, I had already seen this, but did you know what was coming, or did you think, like, somehow, some way, this was going to end, you know, like, this was going to end a different way, or did you predict that he's just going to walk in and he, you know, he shoots him in the Continental?
I did not see that coming at all. Up to this point, John has not shown a lot of regard for his own well-being through the first two movies, other than he has to stay alive to accomplish what he wants to accomplish. And I do feel, though, that he respected the rules of what he signed up for. He respected, you know, he has this marker. He doesn't like it, but he's going to honor it, even though the guy just blew up his house with an incendiary grenade. You know, and he's lost a lot of what he still held true. But OK, fine. He's going to at least honor what he swore to. And the rules of the Continental matter to him. He follows those. So when he just pulls out his gun and blows him away, I shouldn't have been surprised by that, I guess, because, you know, I was expecting a little more of a climactic sort of battle, but we haven't gotten that throughout this series. So I should have known better that wasn't going to just follow the Hollywood tradition. It was going to do something different. And it makes it so much more interesting. It makes the character of John that much more interesting to me. And now it seems like he does want to live. It seems like he wants to survive. It's strange. I'm noticing that change with him. Like if he really wanted to live, he would have waited and planned and eventually got him and continued to follow the rules, but he doesn't care anymore. He's going to operate outside the rules. So I think thinking about what the third one is going to look like, it's going to be really interesting, and I'm excited for it.
Yeah, when I first saw this, I was like, when that happened, I was shocked by it. I really was. And just, again, there's something between Winston and Jonathan.
Winston's the only one that calls him Jonathan.
Yeah, there seems like there's a lot more there, and I'm intrigued. Like, I'm intrigued by it. But, and again, you can tell he cares for him based on the ending scene, because he meets him, you know, in the park. And you can tell Winston's like hurt by him telling Jonathan that, like, the Continental is off grounds. Like, you have none of its privileges, you're excommunicado, your life is forfeit. And that, again, you have to believe that this world exists. But in this, you know, in this universe, I do. But that scene where he's like, then why am I not dead? And he's like, because I deemed it not to be. And then everybody just stops and looks at him. I was like, ooh, that's tense. Like, yeah. I really liked that as well. But then, again, first seeing this movie, when Winston says, you might need this, and he hands him a marker, I'm like, oh shit. Like, so he's gonna help him eventually. Like, even though he's excommunicado, like, well, the marker's sacred, you have to honor it. So how will that play into the third one? And then again, like, I just love the fact that this hot, like, well, I guess secret society, but they're using old typewriters, and like, I love those scenes of them typing in everything. Like,
and the old like phone switcher with the, yeah, they got to plug the jack in. It's awesome.
Yes. I love all that. But when he, you know, again, when he's like, whoever comes, I'll kill them. I'll kill them all. And Winston's just like, of course you will. And it's like, yeah, I actually believe that.
Yeah.
like it's so believable. But then too, like, the tension and the ramp up to the actual like end of the movie when he's walking with the dog who doesn't have a name. And I, for some reason, I love that every time he says that. Does he have a name? No. Like for some reason, I find that really funny that this dog doesn't have a name. Were you going to say something?
No.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I just, for some reason, find that really funny. But when he starts seeing all of these people getting the messages that he's excommunicado and the contract is there and he starts running, like I literally was like, oh, I want the third one. Like, oh my God, like, where's this going to go? And I just, I love this movie. I thought the way that it ended was really well done. It made you want to see what happens. Like, okay, where is this going to go?
Yeah, the first one ends and you want a sequel just because you like so much of what they did, not because they necessarily, you know, set up a sequel with the first one. This one, it clearly leads right into another film, which is great. Fine. Like, give me 75 of these. I'll watch all of them.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we've got four. Well, the fourth one coming out, and then there is a spinoff show coming out too. So, which I'm interested in, called The Continental. I'm actually interested to see what they're going to do with that. But
what's that going to be on? I don't know that I've heard this yet.
I actually do not know what that's going to be on. It's been a while since I've really looked into anything for that.
So making another comparison back to the Bourne series, they made five Bourne movies. They've got four and possibly more John Wick movies planned. They made a one season show about the organization behind all of it called Treadstone that it wasn't until we covered it that I even bothered to look up anything about it and even discovered that exists because I'd heard nothing about it. It's never talked about. Like, nobody knows that that exists. I'm a little nervous, even though I want to know more about the Continental. Like, that would be cool. I want that. I'm a little nervous.
The thing that I do like about it, and there's another project in the works, but I'm not going to say what it is because that will be a spoiler for you. The thing that I like is the people that are doing the Continental are the ones who do the John Wick movies.
Okay, it's got
like,
a shot.
With Treadstone, it was not people involved realistically with the franchise. With this is people who have worked on this. So I have a little bit more confidence that it could be interesting. Now, how long can it go? I'm not really sure. I don't need every single TV show to be 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, 11 Walking Dead seasons long, you know, depending. But I am interested in that. So, Rob, any final thoughts that you had on this movie?
I enjoyed it thoroughly, if you can't tell already. I am so mad at myself that I waited this long to watch it. But yeah, it's really a blast. And if you're somebody who's been listening that's never seen this movie and you just kind of like, yeah, you know what, I'd maybe like to check this out, but I don't know that I'll ever have time, so maybe I'll just kind of listen to a breakdown of it. Like, no, really, it's on HBO Max. Like, go watch this. Or I'm sorry, it's not HBO Max. This is on Tubi.
Yeah.
This is literally on an app that whatever device you were listening to this show on right now, you can download for free and watch this movie for free. There will be some limited commercial interruptions, but you can literally watch this movie for free and you have absolutely no reason not to watch this movie. Or if you haven't seen it in a while, watch it again. You should.
Yeah. Or depending on when you're listening to this episode, because we're talking about this on November 21st. If you catch before, you know, if you catch it before Black Friday ends, you can buy these on 4K for like $7.99 right now.
Oh my.
Yeah. Like, you can buy all three of them for seven. I think the third one's $9.99, but the first two are $7.99 right now. like for Black Friday sales. So I would definitely say that these are worth $7.99. Like, these are definitely like easily worth that price. Considering like if you wanted to rent it because you didn't want commercials, it's $3.99 to rent. So for an extra $4, own it. But we will move to the popcorn time review. And Rob, I'm going to go first this time because I actually thought about this one. And, you know, there were a couple things that I did have a few issues with in this one. One was that, you know, just the casualness that people had when the violence was going on around them. The only time that I felt people acted really accordingly was that scene after he kills the ward. Like the people in the concert, like, get the hell out of there. Like everybody goes running. And I'm like, okay, like that makes sense. But I cannot, in good conscience, like, I still, with everything else, though, it ups everything from the first one. And even though I feel like I didn't have complaints about the first one and had a few minor things, I still have to give this 5 buckets. Like, I just thoroughly had a blast with this. I almost did consider giving it 4.5. And I said, no, like, I just had a really great time. I think it ups everything from the first one. And my small complaint is not enough to say that this is not, if I like this better than the first one, I have to give it the same score. So for me, this is a 5, just like the first one.
No surprise. I'm also at a 5, and I assumed that we would both be 5 on this. Yeah. I mean, some of the things that I kind of made note of that I like, that could have been better. I didn't particularly care for that. Or I wish this would have been handled a little bit differently. Doesn't in any way add up to enough where it detracts from how great of a ride this movie is. And if you love good action, the creativity and the execution is top notch. I mean, it's really, I said this about the first one. I'm going to repeat this for the second one, that if you are somebody who works in the industry and you're looking to get into being a second unit director, or you're going to work in the stunt field of some kind, like, the John Wick films should be required viewing if you want to get into it. Just to show you what's possible when you break out from the standard, just what you get with everything else. This is choreography and action at the highest level.
Yeah, no, it really is. Like, this is, boy, you just, if you want to make an action film and see how to frame it, this is what you should look at. You know, it's just, it's so well done. I can't wait for you to watch the third one. And I cannot wait for the fourth movie. Have you watched the trailer for it yet? Or are you going to wait until you watch the third one?
I'm going to wait.
Okay. Yeah, I figured as much. So, you know, that's going to do it for this episode of John Wick 2. Well, John Wick Chapter 2. We'll be moving on to Chapter 3. And then we will be getting into the Cloverfield franchise with Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane, and the Cloverfield Paradox. That takes us into December. And by the time we're done, good God, it's almost going to be 2023. I cannot believe that.
Yeah. So, later this week, you know, we were recording this on a Monday night. It'll be Thanksgiving in just a few days. Matt, what are you thankful for in the entertainment industry? Be it video games, comics, movies, TV, what are you most thankful for from the entertainment industry?
Right now, God of War Ragnarok. I
kind of knew that was coming.
I was late to get on. I asked Rob to give me a couple more minutes because I was trying to get to a save point in that game. I could not put it down. But, you know, I guess, Rob, I think that's not to get crazy sentimental here, but maybe that's a good time. You know, I want to say that I am thankful for one of my childhood memories from the entertainment industry, and it's probably fitting to say this now. Sadly, news came of the passing of Jason David Frank, who most people would know as Tommy Oliver, the Green Ranger, White Ranger, and Mighty Morphin Power Rangers. But that was, like, that show was a huge part of my childhood. But, you know, I guess what I'm going to say here is, not only just the entertainment industry, like if you guys are listening to this episode, like I'm thankful for my friends. I'm thankful for Rob. I'm thankful for Harrison, who people know from the Basement Binge. Obviously my two sons, Brandon and Peyton, my family. But yeah, you know, you never know when you might need someone to talk to, have a shoulder to lean on. And this right here, like, this is such a good outlet for me to talk about movies in, you know, a setting with somebody who I consider a very good friend, who I met through a job, and neither of us work at, well, you know, we don't work for the same company anymore, but, you know, that's, you know, I feel like we 100%, I feel, talk more now than when we work for the same, same company. And to me, that's the sign of our friendship was real at that time. And I am thankful for that.
Yeah. You know, I'm thankful that, I'm thankful you started this show 2.5 years ago. I was just thankful that you were putting it out, you know, just give me something to listen to. And then, you know, having the opportunity to come on and talk about the MCU rankings, that was a lot of fun. I'm thankful for the opportunity once, sometimes twice a week to have, you know, something to look forward to regardless of everything else going on. Listeners, I'm thankful for you. You chose this show, you downloaded this show, you subscribe to the show, you interact with the show on social media, and hopefully have told your friends about this show. So thank you for taking a moment to listen to my inane ramblings at times, and continue to support the show. Thank you for if you've bought any of the sponsors' products, you know, I'm thankful for you for that. And it's you know, the news about Jason David Frank, you know, I was into Power Rangers for a little bit. I kind of got out of you know, some of those shows as I got older. But I distinctly remember, you know, when the Green Ranger showed up, and I distinctly remember him being the White Ranger. And, you know, that was one, it started with Ninja Turtles and then it moved into Power Rangers, I think, were some of the biggest influences on me having kind of a lifelong passion for martial arts that I was never able to do anything about till I was already in college. And have, you know, been in love with it ever since. You know, I think those were two major influences on it. And it was disappointing news. But in terms of things I'm thankful for, I'm thankful for Matt. I'm thankful for the show. Thankful for our friend Harrison that we get a chance to talk to. And listeners, I'm thankful for you.
Yeah, well said. So, you know, hey, listeners, if you want to respond to the show, tell us what you're thankful for, regardless of what it is. So, we appreciate you listening. Don't forget to subscribe to the show. You can stay up to date as we've got a ton more coming. Certainly need to figure out a roadmap for December to close out the year. But you can interact with the show on all social media platforms. We are on Reddit, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. You can email the show. It's a very simple email. It's basically the initials. It's mgttmpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you're thinking. Let us know what you're thankful for. And we will see you very soon at Matt Goes to the Movies.